Here we go. It's hour number two of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. And joining us now, John Owning from Pro Football Focus here on your home of the Cowboys. And a good afternoon, John. How the heck are you?
Doing swell. How about y'all? How y'all doing?
Well, we're doing good. I thought the press conference earlier, did you get – I mean, that took a little bit of the wind out of the sails.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always Jerry to use 300 words for something that only needs 10. So it was – It was an interesting experience for sure.
But I thought it was interesting hearing Shoddy talk about, you know, what kind of defensive coordinator they're going to be looking for, the exhaustive search that they plan, and some of the traits that they want that guy to have. What qualities do you think work best for the Cowboys and they should be looking for here in this hire?
Well, like they said, I want someone they have the ability to adapt their scheme to the personnel they have. And that's something that, you know, Eberflus wasn't able to do consistently last year. He was too stubborn with his schemes. And I think that's something that they've obviously pinholed as something that has to be with their next defensive coordinator, because in today's NFL, with the way offenses are able to attack defenses, you have to be able to adjust. You have to be able to do what your defensive personnel does best. And if you're too stubborn, there's going to be offensive coordinators that are going to be able to find your weaknesses and attack it with consistency.
And do you have like one guy in mind or a handful of guys that match that description from your perspective?
Yeah, my favorite guy is I'm driving the Jim Leonard bandwagon. If anybody wants to jump on and join, we have plenty of seats available. But I'm a big fan of him. I love the work he did at Wisconsin, I think. And if anybody wants to learn more about Jim Leonard, just type in Jim Leonard on YouTube and Clinic, and he has a couple of clinic talks on there, and you can kind of get a general understanding of who he is as a person, as a coach, and what kind of like his defensive philosophy is. And the things that I really like about him is not only does he adjust his scheme to fit his personnel, which I think is one thing that coaches that come from college don't get enough credit for, is they have to adapt their scheme consistently to the personnel because it's so different from, you know, every couple of years or bringing in, you know, almost a whole new starting lineup. So you have to be able to adjust on the fly and make these adjustments that guys and be able to. One thing that Shoddy mentioned that I think Jim Leonard does really well is be able to communicate complicated subjects very simply. And in those clinic talks, you can see he does that very well. And when a lot of times when they're talking to 18 to 21 year olds, you got to be able to simplify very complicated concepts. And I think Jim Leonard does that really well. I really like the way that he structures his entire defense. I like the way that he attacks opposing offenses. He doesn't let the offense dictate how the defense is going to play. He tries to use his defense to dictate the way the offense is going to play. And I think that's a consistent part of the kind of defensive coordinators that I really like, you know, the Brian Floreses, the Jim Schwartzes. They are very good at dictating and being aggressive to the offense and dictating what's going to happen.
When it comes to the personnel on the defensive side of the football, I know Steven looked at a linebacker and he looked at the secondary here, John. But when you go ahead and you're looking at the Cowboys depth chart, what's the first area that you're saying we got to address this and this needs to be improved?
I think the first area is probably linebacker, just because that was where you had the most inept play without like injuries really hampering the area. I think secondary was obviously bad, but there were so many injuries that hit that part of the defense that they have like a little bit of an excuse for their terrible play, but linebacker doesn't. And then outside of linebacker, I definitely think edge defender, just because I think the only guys under contract are Ezeraku and James Houston. So you definitely need to add more talent there. I would say probably linebacker and edge would be the first two for me that I would look to for the Cowboys to upgrade, because you have to be able to win in the front seven. As you can see in the playoffs, most of the teams there are winning with their front seven. They have really strong defensive lines and really competent linebackers behind them. And competent linebackers that not only play against the run, but they don't have to be hidden against the pass as well.
John, okay, you mentioned the edges and the linebackers, and I know you've already got started on your process of doing the draft. Give me those two. Give me the players that you would take then at 12 and the one you would take at 20 in this case.
Oh, Ryan's coming with the hard questions right away. But just to let people know about my process, you know, I'm not someone who places grades on players really early in the process. I try to get a feel for players first and then try to dive in. But, you know, from my early looks and the people that I like, I think obviously my names are going to be similar to a lot of the other people's. I think names at 12 from linebacker and defensive end. Obviously, I'm a huge Sonny Styles fan.
Yeah,
I think he would be a perfect fit in this linebacker crew to go with DeMarvian Overshown. He's someone who I think he really has really good instincts. He's very competent in coverage. And the thing that I like about him is he's improved, you know, incredibly in his ability to take on and get off blocks.
Yeah,
even on the
sure
play, he missed his first tackle of the year, he got off a block to do so. Even on a play that was bad, so to say, for the game. But from an evaluation perspective, it's great to see him be able to get off blocks, especially as a Cowboys fan where the linebackers seem to stick to blocks consistently.
Yeah.
And then on the edge, you know, I'm not a really big fan early on of the Keldrick Fox and TJ Parkers of the world.
Oof, yes.
But I really like David Bailey. I really like Reuben Bain. Those would probably be the two guys that I would consider at those two spots. You know, Cassius Howell.
I was going to ask you about Howell. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are two guys would probably, height less so, but Cassius Howell would be someone I would probably consider more with the second first round pick.
Yeah.
I think that his speed bend around the corner would be really good with the Cowboys be able to play that open side edge for whoever their defensive coordinator is, whether it's a four down guy or a five down guy or a five man front guy. I think he would be a good fit. And one name I also want to talk about, just because I have to bring him up and no one else brings him up, I know Wojcik probably already knows who I'm going to bring up, is my guy, Akeem Mezidor from Miami.
Yeah.
He's not going to be a first-round name, but I tell you, his pass rush ability is as good as these first-round guys. He's so intentional with his footwork, so intentional with his hands. He cuts angles. He corners extremely well, and he sequences his hands better than I think anybody in the class. There are plays where he's initiating with a double swipe to one side, and then he'll transition to a snatch arm over on the other side. I think that was against Notre Dame, his first pressure. Really, really, really impressive play, and I think he's just been dominating during the college football playoffs, and I'm really, really excited to see what him and Reuben Bain can do against Ole Miss tomorrow.
Yeah, let's make sure we check them feet, though, bro, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Check them feet.
You got a lot of connections, bro. You got a lot of connections. Check them feet. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, 100% I've heard. The thing that kind of flummoxes me, though, is that we usually don't see people get knocked for injury stuff like that until we get around the combine.
Oh, they start killing him.
He seems to be getting knocked prematurely right now because he's getting ranked consistently in like the 70s, 80s, 90s in these rankings. And you have another guy, Romello Height, who's another guy who's going to be 24, 25 on draft day. But he's being projected in the 20s and 30s. So I'm just like confused, and I personally think Mezidor is a better all around player than Hyatt.
Yeah, I tell you, the scouts got him in the first round. There's scouts that have this guy in the first round. As you and I have talked, though, we need to look at them feet, make sure our medical's okay to keep him in the first round.
He has a really interesting story. He started out as like a defensive tackle when he came out, and then he's grown into such a. Not only is he a good defensive end, he's a pretty athletic dude. He's pretty quick. He corners at a good place. He's able to maintain his speed around the corner, things that you look for to see if a guy's a good enough athlete to play on the edge. He kind of does all of that. So he's just a really fascinating story the more and more I dig into him as a player and a person.
It's John Owning, Pro Football Focus, here with you on The Fan. How does the free agent class line up for the Cowboys' needs this go around?
I mean, I've only taken a preliminary look at the free agencies and who's available and stuff, but I'm not the biggest fan of it. And I know that, you know, obviously as of right now, it's going to be as good as it's going to look because a lot of these guys are going to get re-signed, franchise tagged, and all of that kind of stuff. So I'm not in love with the free agent classes. I wish it would have been almost a different year that the Cowboys are going to be able to spend money, but there should be able to find guys that can provide substantial upgrades over what they're doing, but it's just which of those guys is going to actually make it to free agency.
You know, continuing with some of the defensive coordinator traits that you want to see, John, is it more about, hey, you're playing man coverage? Is it about the simulated pressures? Is it about disguising coverages? Like, how much is that important to you when it comes to these coaches?
Yeah, I just want somebody who's more aggressive. I want somebody who's going to attack the opposing offense. I like being a more aggressive, maybe a little bit higher of a blitz rate, you know, blitzing a little bit more, using sim pressures, providing different looks, and obviously disguised coverage rotation, showing too high pre-snap and rotating to a single high coverage, or showing single high rotating to a too high, showing, you know, a Tampa 2 and bringing a cover zero blitz, all those type of things, you know, that Brian Flores does so good at Minnesota and that Jim Leonard did so good at Wisconsin. Those are the type of traits that I think personally that I would think fit this team and would kind of send the defense in the correct direction moving forward. You know, you see all these kind of defensive teams that are on the cutting edge of schematically, like Mike McDonald, someone who I look at a lot, and what they're doing in Seattle. I think that they're really on the cutting edge of what you're supposed to do from a defensive scheme perspective. And I think it would be nice for Dallas to kind of push their defense in that direction moving forward.
John Owning, PFF, with us here on The Fan.
All right, John. So let's talk about the safeties. Caleb Downs did declare today, I'm trying to will him into existence at pick 12. Ooh, I don't know if he's going to make it there, right? But I, when you look around the league, I thought it was interesting that you brought up some covering fire there for Malik Hooker, because I think the Cowboys safety room is absolutely atrocious. And quite frankly, that includes Malik Hooker. He's a box safety now. He'll come up and tackle. I don't know, and I told you this, when's the last time he made a play coverage, but maybe just being so narrow-minded when watching the Cowboys, you will watch other teams around the league. Why is maybe Malik Hooker not that bad compared to other safeties around the league?
Because I think Malik Hooker falls into that category. He's not like a difference maker, but he's also not someone who's killing you either. He's kind of just like a little bit of an average safety, and I would say. And when you have a defense like the Cowboys that needs upgrades at so many places, they were playing below average at so many positions, you kind of have to pick and choose which spots you're gonna quote unquote really target to upgrade. And I think Malik Hooker is one of the holdovers that you can kind of maintain and still play competent defense with. You know, I don't think Donovan Wilson is like that anymore. I think he's kind of fallen off and been below average, and you have to find a better upgrade over him. I think Malik Hooker, he's just a really smart guy. He doesn't make many plays, but I think he does prevent more plays than he gets credit for. He is in the right spot. We don't highlight the plays where he's playing, you know, single high safety and he prevents a post from getting open deep, or he's, you know, being the curl hook defender and he robs a crosser and the quarterback has to go to his second look and then he finds someone. I think he does those type of things really well. He's just not the type of person who's going to make a ton of plays on the ball himself. He's not going to be making game-changing type of plays. And, you know, if this defense was already, you know, hovering around like the 12 to 15 range, then definitely I think Hooker would be an area that you look, the free safety position would be an area that you look to upgrade. But the Cowboys are so bad and need so many help at so many different places that I think Hooker is one of the guys that you can kind of still win with.
You know, them having so many needs is one of the reasons that, at least for like a thought experiment, I'm up for considering, you know, what it would look like if you did not bring back George Pickens. I don't know if I detected any sort of waffling on that today from the guys. But, you know, I would point out in 2021, they averaged 31 points a game. In 2023, they averaged 29.9 points per game. And, you know, this year was 27.7. Is this the best use of their resources?
I mean, I think so. I think any time you can get a type of talent that can kind of stretch defenses, that can force defenses to have to pick and choose who they're doubling, who they're bracketing, someone's always going to get singled up, so you're always going to have answers for no matter what the defense is doing from a coverage perspective. I think you have to be able to have that, because despite the fact that we have seen the Cowboys have more, quote-unquote, more score more points per game in previous years that they didn't have George Pickens, we have seen them in very important situations where teams really bite down on CeeDee Lamb, and then the Cowboys just don't have the other guys that have the ability to create separation and to really consistently create good throwing windows for Dak Prescott, and that's where the offense kind of stagnates. This year, I would say the offense more stagnated because of, you know, suspect play calling in the red zone and then offensive line woes and injuries up front. So I think that you want to keep this passing game as humming as it is right now, try to keep it operating at as high as the level moving forward, and try to stretch the resources at other places to try to make it work.
So you mentioned the suspect play calling in the red zone. Overall, what were your thoughts on Brian Schottenheimer in year one as a head coach, but also the play caller?
I think overall he did pretty well with the hand that he was given. I would give him probably a solid B-. From a play calling perspective, I think there's two issues I think that he had I think one is that he was too cognizant that he had Brandon Aubrey and his ability to make really long kicks in his back pocket, so he wasn't aggressive enough with his play calling when he got to like a midfield, cross midfield. I think he should have been more aggressive there. And in short yardage situations, especially in the low red zone, I don't think he relied enough on the run game. I don't think he trusted Javonte Williams and company enough to really punch the ball in on, give him multiple opportunities to punch the ball in on those short yardage opportunities.
You're the man, John. Enjoy Wild Card Weekend, and we'll be looking forward to catch up with you soon.
Hey, appreciate you guys having me on. Have a great day.
Salute. There he goes, John Owning, Pro Football Focus, and the Cross Chop podcast there with his guy Nick Harris, Star Telegram. It's a quality pod. You can find that on YouTube. But we got the C-Note coming up next, Cowboys News of the Evening, what Shoddy had to say about what he's looking for in the D.C. and the way that the defense is going to play moving forward. We'll get you that coming up next here on The Fan. All right, time for the C-Note, and the best recap you're going to hear of everything that was notable from today's Cowboys season-ending press conference with Jerry, Steven, and Brian. Segments brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car or truck wreck, call the Frankels first, 214 or 817-333-3333. There's never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. The Frankels are the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. Krusty's Corner's coming up in about 15 minutes or so. You'll hear from Broadus. Okay, Jerry, like at the top of the deal, celebrated keeping Dak healthy, talked about Shoddy's role in that. Did you guys notice anything from the scheme that was more protective of Dak? I think the only thing that you could point to was that Javonte Williams' pass protection ability was just elite, and maybe Shoddy was instrumental in identifying we're going to have a great pass protecting running back as we move into the future with Dak Prescott if we want to get the best out of him. Maybe that was one of the hidden reasons he was better this year than he's ever been.
I kind of feel like it really was the quarterback's doing. How many times early in the year did we, and I understand what you're saying about the blitz pickup stuff, because there was a lot of times that Williams was cleaning up messes.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think there was a lot of times early in this season where Dak was having to avoid, move, find a spot, throw the ball. You know, he took some hits. Maybe it's Dak's own conditioning going into the season. You know, the way that he always kind of comes back in shape, but whatever he did,
he was shredded.
Yeah, yes. Whatever he did last year, as far as getting ready, the diet, the stretching, the whatever, whoever he was working with, you know, go back to that situation because he was moving around really well in the pocket. And then when he did take some hits, you know, he was able to kind of pop up. You know, he didn't put himself in any real bad position. So I think it was really on the quarterback's conditioning going into that was more than some kind of scheme changer. Even though that Williams did better, though, it might have helped, too, having Booker inside, you know, with Booker and Smith and BB on his second year. Just a little bit better inside there, too.
Guyton had a good run where he wasn't giving up as many pressures, maybe?
Yeah, I mean,
when he played.
Yeah.
I worry about Guyton. I'm not going to lie.
Just for health reasons.
I want to believe in Guyton, and I think he's got an NBA body. I think he's one of these NBA guys. You know, when we watch him and he plays the wear and tear, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait,
it's not built solid.
Yeah.
It's not built for contact.
Yeah, it's not built for contact. And all of a sudden he gets taken wide, and then he sprains an ankle. He rolls over on it, and
yeah,
you know, it's these guys in the NBA, they're great looking physical specimen guys, and then they can't stay healthy. And I'm afraid this might be one of those guys that can't stay healthy for you.
Well, need him to be the best he's ever been next year and stay healthy. I think they were committal to Tyler Smith today at left guard. Shoddy said that's what he told Tyler Smith, is for the time being your left guard. But if we get into a situation where somebody gets hurt, then we might need you to slide to left tackle. But at least for offseason purposes, your permanent position is left guard. But he mentioned by name Guyton and Thomas, and feeling pretty good about them with a full offseason of work. But it is notable that in back-to-back seasons, Guyton went out with injury, and then it was like he was healthy and maybe possibly could come back. But last year they went with forget his name, the other Adoga.
Yeah.
And this year they stuck with a different combination instead of sliding Guyton back in there. Maybe confidence isn't that high. On Javonte, Steve said he is at the top of their list and they want to sign him on a multi-year deal. And Williams wants to be back, and they are talking to the agent already. So if you're a big fan of Javonte, it seems like that deal might get done there in the first couple, 2-3 days of free agency.
And I would think that if it's going to get done, it's probably not going to be anything that's a crazy high market type of deal. Because I don't think they're going to go. I mean, that was the whole thing with Rico last year. They didn't want to go over and pay $6 million for him. So I think Javonte probably gets himself a deal that he's comfortable with, but I don't think it's going to be anywhere near that $10 million range.
Yeah, we were kind of talking about that in the valuation of the guy, him and Breece Hall.
Yeah.
Right? $10.3 million.
I just don't. I think the Cowboys have pivoted in that philosophy ever since Zeke. I don't think they're paying top of the market for backs anymore.
Man, I would love to see them go get bring Javonte Williams back and get Breece Hall. That would be something to legitimately get very excited about. Because I mean, for as much as I like Javonte and he checks most of the boxes, he just doesn't have that game breaking ability. Jerry was pretty defensive throughout the afternoon, and he was asked if Shoddy can hire his own DC, and he basically said Flus wouldn't have been here without Shoddy's approval. And said Brian basically has a chance to redeem himself with what he does next. So I thought that was interesting. But I would say Jerry more rattled and defensive than usual. And it became very clear that he's got rabbit ears. He's hearing all the criticisms about him. And I hope that puts him in a position where, you know, he's not defiantly insisting that he is all those things, but he actually, you know, has some actions that can change the narrative about him. I think that's what you got to hope, that it's become personal for Jer-Bear. Because throughout a lot of the press conference, he actually had a rare moment of honesty where he said, I don't want to come up here and say we're going to be more aggressive than we have been and then not do it. And you guys would be like, hey, what happened there? But then by the time they got to the walk-off, he's back to what was the verbiage? We're going all in, or we're going to be super aggressive.
Budget, the budget.
We're going to bust that budget. Yeah, and he was not willing to go there publicly, standing next to or sitting next to Stephen Jones and Brian Schottenheimer throughout the afternoon. It was much more reserved. But you know, I think maybe something you said earlier, Chief, maybe that he sensed that the air had been taken out of the room by the presser, and he wanted to do something exciting to inject it back in there. So you keep the beat writers strung along. They write stuff. They create content with the idea of building excitement for free agency. But I really don't expect it now.
Yeah, I mean, he says we'll do some dramatic things. It was a dramatic thing we did trading Micah, and he says we're going to keep this thing as good as we can possibly be. Finances are no object. We're going to make it as entertaining as we can and keep it as lively as we can for everybody. That was in the walk-off.
All right. Well, I'll drink to that. I guess there's a chance, but I think if you really want to hope that this team's going to be better, it's nailing the draft and then nailing the budget free agent additions. Mm-hmm. Like the year that they got Jayron Kearse, remember that year where, I mean, they only spent $20 million, but they got six guys that were contributing regularly. Like a couple of times a decade, they'll nail this shopping on a budget deal.
And it's probably the marrying of you get the right defensive coordinator in Dan Quinn, who is able to adjust and has a plan for those type of guys. And he did for Jayron Kearse for a year to 2 years. It was like, holy hell. He's got himself this like rover position where it's like hybrid linebacker safety and it works out great. If they can find that, then I mean, you're going to be cooking, but it is clear, like, the difference in dynamic. And I could be totally wrong with what's going on behind the scenes, but just from observing the presser, for Steven, everything comes back to the draft, and then Jerry just seems much more open-minded to, like, I mean, ask Steven. He knows more about the salary cap, but, hey, I'm down to be a little bit more aggressive in free agency if there's a situation out there that we want to attack. I think him also pointing out trades – if they make a big move, it's to go trade for Max Crosby. It's not signing a free agent. It's them mortgaging those picks or a pick and going to get Crosby out of the Raiders. I really think that's one of their things in the back pocket.
He did mention the idea that it didn't necessarily have to be using the picks, that trades were possible. Shoddy talking about the defense, okay, this is what I teased. Sorry to get to it late. I said the number one thing we have to do is stop the run. I think they took pretty good steps towards that this year, but they need better linebackers. And as Brian told y'all last summer, the entire team needs to be more physical, better tacklers. Says the other thing that they're going to need to do is take the ball away. And, you know, when he talks about that kind of stuff, I think maybe that could have been his biggest criticism with Eberflus. Like, we just didn't put this secondary in enough positions to go get footballs because we were letting the opposition play with clean pockets too much, you know. And we got to do something if you're not winning the one-on-one matchups there. What Shoddy's looking for in a DC, though, I thought was maybe my favorite moment. Great teacher, great communicator. He said the teaching thing is big because what they're asking the team to do is very complicated. This isn't a simple defense on both sides of the ball. And what that goes to is the adjustments, the rotations before and immediately after the snap based on what the offense is doing. And we all have to be on the same page. You know, I think that's a tall task to get better at that for 2026. Like, you need a veteran, smart football team. And if one thing we've learned from the years of Mike Zimmer and Matt Eberflus, this isn't a group of defensive players right now that learn things quickly. And maybe that's because they haven't been taught well enough. Or maybe that's just because, you know, who they kind of are. They do what they do, and they don't have much of an appetite. They're not leaning into learning more. They're not capable of learning more. I don't know what that is. But getting a communicator in there that can inspire and educate very quickly is one of the top priorities for Shoddy. And he said the kind of scheme they want, more flexibility and unpredictability, because that's the kind of stuff that gives them problems.
Right.
Some smooth talking going on there.
Well, we'll see. You know, I think he did a pretty good job on the offensive side of the ball in that department.
I'm not aiming that at you. I'm just aiming that at a guy. You know, when you ask somebody a question like that, you know, and you obviously, did he think the same thing about, you think the same thing about Matt Eberflus when he had the opportunity to, you know, they stepped up there and said, you know, hey, yeah, sure, bring this guy on board. Yeah, absolutely. Shoddy knows.
I mean, you're trying to get the job at that point.
I think,
right?
I think we're getting Buffalo.
You're trying to get a head coaching job, and they're like, hey, we like Eberflus, do you? Hell yeah, I like him. I'm the most agreeable son of a bitch in this building today.
We all like Eberflus. We all do. I think he's a very smooth talker. I think he says exactly for media. He's a great media soundbite guy. You know, when he's, well, you know, that's a good question there, Todd. You know, we want a tough-minded
guy. No, you're right about
guy.
That, yeah.
I'm just saying, you know, how about somebody, you know, go out and prove to us that's who you're really going to go get. You know, if you have a say in this, go out and get one of these guys. Go out and get Jim Leonard. Go out and get the guy at Minnesota. Go out. Don't let me have to deal with some guy I've never heard of before because he was in the Dan Quinn tree or something like that. You know what I'm saying? And maybe it's going to take.
Well, Clayton Adams, we hadn't heard a lot about, and that was a great hire, wasn't it?
You know what? Absolutely. You know, and to me, I'm looking at this though as if they do not play in free agency, you're going to need you're going to need whoever does tricks. You know, magician.
Oh, Chris Angel. Give me Chris Angel.
You're going to need that guy. Mind freak. Because if they don't get players, that dude is going to have to, like, you know, get. He's going to need Harry Houdini to get out of the with the chains and the box underwater.
Magic wand.
It ain't going to matter. It ain't
going to be David Copperfield up there.
It needs to be wins, man. You're right. I'm
tired of everybody standing up there and telling me what I want to hear.
Yeah.
I really am. How about going out there and for one effing time, go out there and be a real NFL team? You know, go out there and make it a priority to get this S right. You know, Wolchuk, you made a great point yesterday. Same amount of wins with Cooper Rush at quarterback last year as this year. Same deal. Same amount. Fired the coach, got rid of guy, you know, same deal. It's the same crap. You had to find a way to win 10 games this year to get in the tournament. You couldn't do that. I'm tired of it, man. I'm tired of you sitting there and telling me that, you know, you're peeing on my leg and you're telling me it's raining.
Yeah.
No. Stop. It's disappointing. It really is, because he's a smooth talker. He's going to make everybody feel comfortable. Hey, that's a good question there. You know, everybody's like, oh, yeah, I asked a good question today. Yeah, okay. Oh, he called me out.
Why I don't ask him any questions.
He does make you feel good. He makes you feel good.
He will completely disarm you from, like, being tough on him. And I don't want to hear it anymore. Oh, we want a coach to – every coach says the same damn thing. yeah, we want a team that can run the ball. We want to be tough on the defensive lines. We want to blah, blah, blah. Go make it actually happen instead of sit there and peeing on my leg.
Yeah, and the fact that they still haven't requested for Jim Leonard today, you know, and Steven was asked about that. We have guys, and probably by the end of the week we'll have requests out. You had an opportunity to go and get this Jim Leonard thing done as early as today. This is the week to do it. He's on a bye. His team's the number one seed. Same thing, really, with Carl Scott, if that's a guy that they're interested in Seattle.
He didn't
Their team's on a bye. They haven't requested any of these guys to our knowledge now, and that is, I got excited. This is what happens, right?
Yeah.
You start to think like maybe it's changing a little bit. Like, ooh, Shoddy's got them moving a little bit faster. Still haven't really seen that as evidence yet, based on them not really taking any movement in terms of who they're talking to for this job yet.
Shoddy didn't want to see Eberflus in the salad line today. Yeah, he didn't want to see him hanging out grabbing a meal. He got tired of him. After that whole thing, he got tired of him. He said, Minnesota, he sent him to the coach's box. Hey, go, you know, just get off the field. I don't have time for you anymore. He didn't want to see him showing up and like, hey, what's going on? Anything happening?
And I think he's tough, and I think he's willing to have the SOB conversations. He just doesn't want to do it publicly. You know, I think he's plenty tough. I don't think he's trying to overly charm or kiss anybody's ass internally.
I think you're absolutely right about that.
Okay, we got to run. Great stuff, though, Brian.
Yeah,
and I appreciate that passion.
You think he's trying to kiss the media's ass?
He's definitely trying to kiss the media's ass.
I think behind closed doors, at least it does
prove
sound
it
as though he
then.
Has the difficult conversations.
Prove the Cliff Notes is stop buffaloing us and quit peeing on us.
Yeah, I think those are two fair, just human decency requests.
You know what? Listen, I'm tired of all the BS going on over at that place. Lot of it. Poor owner, 82-year-old man, has to sit there and try and drum things up and make everybody excited because nobody wants to do anything. The old man's the one that wants to do stuff. Everybody else is afraid of what could happen. Hadn't worked in 30 years, boys. Need to do something different here.
No, amen. I think you should re-cue up that Stephen Jones rant as well, because I think it's dead balls on. You know, we need to see something different, and I hope Shoddy can be a part of that. I'm still a Shoddy believer. Krusty's Corner's coming up next. Brian, where are you taking
it? Yeah, I'm going to make you even worse of a Shoddy believer. We'll do that next.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Lucius. A daily football fix is coming up at 4 o'clock. It's time right here for Krusty's Corner, brought to you by Greystone Roofing. Go to greystone-roofing.com here at the King.
Hey, kids! Your old pal Krusty's gonna teach you 5 new words.
You're not wrong about that.
From Dallas, Texas, number 55, Brian Waters.
Thank you very much, Lucius. I appreciate you playing that every day. Thank you to Greystone for being a part of this as well. Eric and I recorded a Love of the Star this morning. It's up. Encourage you to give it a listen after you're done with our show today. We'd appreciate that. Went through a lot of names, didn't we, Eric?
We did. Yeah, some hidden gems.
Felt like we covered some ground there of some guys, some possibilities. I talked to some guys around the league about some of these coaches and stuff like that. So check that thing out, if you would. That would be Love of the Star. Anywhere you get your Odyssey podcast, for sure. Odyssey. Okay. I went on a little rant. I'm tired of this football team.
I don't blame you. I appreciate it. Felt good.
I'm going to keep trying to find some players for it, though. That I will do. I will not quit on that. This morning was my last morning ever working for DallasCowboys.com.
Ever?
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I run since, something like, I worked for the team, you know, from what was it? How long was I at that team? 1999 to 2005 in scouting, and then Derek Eagleton brought me back 2011. There's 8 years after that, and then came over here and started working. I think I did the math right on that. But, it was I really do appreciate all those folks over there. Derek Eagleton, Nick Eatman, all those guys. Mickey Spagnuolo. I'll say nice things about Mickey. Mickey and I went after it a lot. But I appreciate everybody over there. The reason I'm in the position I am now because of working for DallasCowboys.com, and then the platform to be on that was incredible. It really, really was. And Sean Payton was right. You know, they know your name in China when you work for the Dallas Cowboys. So thank you again for everybody over for that.
I remember when you left ESPN, I said, we need a guy like Broadus. I remember talking to Bruce Gilbert about it. I was like, man, this is great.
Oh, really?
It's great content when you're available.
I appreciate that.
And when the dot-com thing was, you know, transitioning there in 2020, I was like, we need Brian. You know,
well, thank you. I appreciate you saying that.
Been awesome to have you.
I really have really, really enjoyed this. And what we're doing, you know, with Crown Global Media, too, has been a lot of fun as well. Today, though, on the last show, Derek Eagleton put some questions. Derek's probably listening right now because he always does. But Derek asked some questions of us, and I want to ask you guys these questions too, because I think it's some interesting topics, and it's, you know, we're kind of in that. I went on that little rant about talking about needing to do things different and stuff. But when you go back and you blame, Derek was asking, like, could you put a percentage on the blame of the front office, the Matt Eberflus, and the players? Yeah. If you could divide that up of how and why. And I know my thought about it. I'm just curious about, Eric, what your thought is. If you could put a percentage on, you know, the blame of why this didn't work, you know, and like I say, there's the front offices involved, the Eberflus is involved, and the players are involved.
Yeah,
those are the categories that you can work with.
Yeah, and it's tough because the front office and the players are all sort of intertwined there, and so I mean, ultimately, the front office, all the decision makers when it comes to hiring Eberflus,
yeah,
and picking the roster here. I mean, that has to be the biggest chunk.
I agree with you. I totally, and I put a percentage on it at 50%.
I think that's very fair.
I was going to even say 60.
You could put 60, and you know what? I think the fact, and please, I'll allow you to finish, but I totally agree with you, because they hired Matt Eberflus. The front office hired Matt Eberflus. They're the ones that said, well, you know, we know him. We've known him for decades. We think he could coach, you know. And then, but also they'll blame them for the players not being any good. Zach likes to tell you, and he's absolutely right, look at the drafting on the defensive side of the ball. Look at that. That's why this defensive roster is not as good as it needs to be. And maybe Matt Eberflus can't coach that. I think there's some blame there. I think the front office has 50% of this blame for sure.
Yeah.
And then I went Matt Eberflus on 30 and the players on 20 is what I went.
Okay. Yeah. I was
That's how
go
I looked at. Yeah.
60, 30, 10. 60 to the front office, 30 to Eberflus, because he had a hand in some of these players too. Like,
yeah.
He wanted Elam. He wanted, sure, Kenneth Murray. He wanted Sanborn. And then 10% on the players because, I mean, they got to take some ownership of this. But
sure,
they were selected by the front office and the coaching staff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's how I would divide it up.
And I think all of them except for Trayvon Diggs were doing their best, you know? Like, I'll put the blame on you if you're not doing what you're capable of doing because your attitude isn't right, you know?
Right,
but
right.
I generally feel like the Cowboys players gave good effort, you know? They were just ill-prepared to do what the coaching staff wanted. I would probably go 70% front office, because not only are they responsible for the players, but they go through this Eberflus interview and select him,
yeah,
and just have it be a horrible fit. I think they need to own quite a bit of that blame as well.
I think you're on to something. The 70%, 60%, I'm probably too low on mine. How about you, Wooly?
I'm with you. I think 70% on the front office, because it's just a consistent issue.
Yeah.
And, I mean, and Ed Werder brought it up during the presser today. I mean, in yesterday we went through the numbers. Since 2020, three of the last 6 years have been some of the worst defensive seasons in the history of the organization. And those are three different defensive coordinators.
Yeah.
So these are, and Zim's a guy that you at least saw improvement throughout the, yeah, season.
Oh, no, Zim admitted he effed this thing up too.
But you didn't at, yeah, all with, yeah, Flus and with Mike Nolan. So I think 70% on the front office, because they're the ones that are still hiring the coaches. They're the ones that are still putting this together in terms of the players. And they have been refusing to change the way in which they operate. And then I'd probably go 20% on Flus, because he was stubborn as hell and didn't want to change.
That's what I'm saying. I threw the 30% on Flus because, yeah, his inflexibility.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, like, you know, you go into a job and you're like, okay, man, I'm not going to have Micah Parsons. I'm going to have to do some things differently here. You know, all season long, just the stubbornness not to even try and do something a little different. And at the end, I'll blame at the end the front office. I think it's inexcusable for Jerry or Steven or anybody of these in that front office to tell me that when asked why Logan Wilson didn't play, it's like, well, that was the plan. Well, how about you go in there and tell the head coach or the defensive coordinator, you don't play Logan Wilson, you're fired. Well, I'll make a change right now. But to inexcusably have to maybe explain, well, that was kind of the plan going in. Somebody should have right then and there. If that was the general manager should know exactly, he should be able to tell the coaches, play these guys. And if you don't play them, I'm going to fire you. But the fact that, you know, that Jerry has to stand up there and Steve and everybody said, well, it was a thought that we, you allowed Matt Eberflus to go ahead and do that at the end of the year. When you told him, and I think that maybe the message wasn't told to him strong enough. Was it just implied? Oh, we'd like to see Logan Wilson this week. I blame the general manager for that one. I do.
Totally fair.
You as a general manager, you have got to walk in there and tell that guy, I'm tired of seeing Kenneth Murray play. Let's play Logan Wilson.
Especially when you're the owner and general manager.
Yeah.
Like, you have all the autonomy you could ever have.
Any general manager can walk in there and tell the head coach what to do. He can. He could walk in there and say, "Hey, I'd like for you to play this guy this week, and let's see what we got." You know, and I can't believe that the message didn't get through to somebody. You know, but the general manager needs to be responsible for that too. Like, he could stand there and say, "Well, that was kind of our plan." Oh no, sir. If it was your plan, it should have been executed, and it wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, if it's going to be your plan, it better be flawless, you know. And we don't know to what extent Eberflus was messing up. Like, to hear Dante Fowler the other day in his exit interview, like his line, I don't care how good you think your scheme is, you got to evolve around your players, take your players' opinions on some things. I can't wait until more information, because I think there's going to be even more stuff about how stubborn that he was. If we're going to lose and you're going to give me bad players, then I'm going to do it my way.
Yeah.
I think is what you found out. And maybe the pride and ego of a guy that had been a head coach could not be subverted enough to take suggestion.
Well, see, that's the thing about it is, if he would have fired him with two games left, and everybody said, well, why did you fire him now? I asked him to do something specifically, and he didn't do it. We're not going to have that around here.
Yeah, because we had to find out more about Logan Wilson. We got a one-game sample size.
That's all.
We needed a month.
That's all.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he could play or not. I really don't.
They got a big cap.
I don't know. So to me, again, I like what you guys all said. I think the front office needs to take a lot of blame for the Matt Eberflus hire, and for him to do what he did during the year, you know, and maybe Shoddy. I mean, how much did Shoddy needed to go in there and be a little bit more firmer with what the expectations were needing to be going forward? Obviously, that didn't happen either.
Yeah, difficult conversations is something that Shoddy prides himself on being able to have and make them productive. And I would say he failed in that regard when it came to his DC.
Yep.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Krusty's Corner every afternoon, 3:40, brought to you by Greystone Roofing. Wolchuk, I need a fix, man.
All right, I got you. This NFC's team is all in. Black Eyes and Silent Movies. That's next.